All right, fans, thank you guys for joining us once again. This is the Voice of the Fans podcast. I'm your man, Cam, and today we're joined by Mr. Young Sam Rothstein. Cleveland Steele, how you doing?
Doing great, Clay. How about yourself?
I'm doing well, sir. Thank you for asking. And our special guest today, Mr. Eric Williams, beat writer for the Los Angeles Chargers, Hall of Fame voter for the NFL. Eric, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for joining us, sir. Mm-hmm. Fans, this week we're going to talk about, obviously, recap of the NFL championship weekend. Since we got Eric on the line, talk about some of the Hall of Fame voting. We're going to have some NBA discussions here later, a little later, Cleveland and I. But first, as always, fans.
I don't get to participate in NBA?
Hey, you can stick with us all show if you want to, buddy. If you got the time, we can always have your feedback. It's always appreciated.
Yeah, I appreciate the offer. Maybe next time.
See? Fans, it's January 22nd, week 72 of the Voice of the Fans show. As always, we always do with our dates, number 22, number 72. And we'll let our guest go first. Eric, number 22.
Ooh, that's easy.
That number comes to your mind?
That was my number growing up.
Okay. So E. Williams, huh?
So Michael Haynes.
Michael Haynes, wow. That was
my favorite player growing up, cornerback.
Wow.
Oakland Raiders.
Wow. Now, Eric, you haven't played corner in quite a long time.
my knees keep telling me that when I wake up in the morning. Hey, but 18 picks in high school, that's respectable.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, that is pretty respectable, in fact. Okay, so Cleveland, number 22. Who wore it best? When it first came to your mind, what do you think of when you think number 22?
The person that comes to mind is the all-time leading rusher in the NFL, a guy named Emmitt Smith. Perhaps you've heard of him.
He's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, a time or two I have heard of him. I got a couple guys that come to my mind. Emmitt Smith was the one. I did think of Haynes, so Eric, good one. Thanks for putting that one in there for us. Elgin Baylor.
Ooh.
Is somebody that I think about, Mr. Seattle University.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
And then, obviously, Clyde Drexler was a little further down on that list.
Yeah.
But when we think of the number 72, there's a couple guys out there. I actually did some research and found this guy. I didn't know he was from around the way, fellas. What do you guys think of the number 72?
Two names for me, John Matuszak, another Raider.
John Matuszak. So you're a Raider fan. Is that what you sound like?
Pretty much. I mean, I can't tell a lie. I was a guy growing up. I think Ed Tootall Jones. 72, is that correct?
Ed wore 72, yes he did, yes.
And then
Michael
Bennett, maybe?
There you go, another good call. I didn't have that one listed. So Eric's rattling off. He leave anybody left for you, Cleveland?
You know, I was definitely leaning towards the Michael Bennett with regards to the number 72 as being the person that comes readily to mind. And then as we were talking, I had to think of, because last week it was number 71, and I thought of Trouble Man with the Washington Redskins, but then I had to double back, and Dexter Manley wore the number 72 quite well as well.
That was a superior bookend. Those guys were pretty awesome. So good week, good work out of you. William Refrigerator Perry. He wore, you know, he made the refrigerator kind of a household, not the household name, but he was a household name back in the 80s, obviously, after their championship run. And then Bob Sapp, fellas. I didn't know Bob Sapp went to the University of Washington.
Yeah?
Oh, what? I did not know that. But Bob Sapp.
Wow, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, right about the time I left. But, yeah, I didn't know he went to the University of Washington. So I want to throw that out there. Now, again, fans, we got Eric Williams, Mr. Los Angeles Chargers beat writer. If you don't know it, all things kind of flow through Eric. When there's one guy in the room and you have to kind of pause before you ask any questions and make sure Eric gets his question. But then again, if you wait too long, Eric will ask all the questions for you. So it's kind of it's a weird situation there.
But I think you just go ahead and ask your question, Cam.
I've taken your advice too. Just go ahead and ask a question. Don't dilly dally around.
Shoot your shot, man.
So now I'm gonna shoot my shot. Now we talked about this a few times throughout the season. The quarterback situation with the Chargers.
Mm-hmm.
Who does Lynn replace Rivers with? Does he actually let Tyrod Taylor play in? Mm-hmm. Do they draft a quarterback? What's your thoughts on that situation?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough question because I think they could go a lot of different ways, depending, you know, on the decision makers and what they want to do. You know, I think there's certain people in the building that would like Phillip Rivers back to kind of finish out his legacy with the team and to open up the building and to give them a bridge quarterback for whoever they take in the draft. And then I think there's another section of the building that would like to move on from Phillip Rivers and maybe give Tyrod Taylor a shot or another quarterback that could kind of run Anthony Lynn style on offense, which is, you know, that zone read and a quarterback that's a little more mobile. So I don't think they decided yet. I think they're still kind of going back and forth and trying to figure that part out. So I think a couple things. When I think of the situation, I'm reminded of what the Seattle Seahawks did when they signed Matt Flynn, they drafted Russell Wilson, and they still had Tavares Jackson, and they just had an open competition, best man wins. I think that the Chargers should do something similar. I think they should get 2-3 guys in the mix that they like and let them all battle it out and see who the best person is. So if it's Tyrod Taylor and let's say you draft Justin Herbert and then Easton Stick is there, maybe you bring in even another guy. I think you just got to throw numbers at the position to make sure you give yourself the best opportunity to get it correct. And if Anthony Lynn truly believes that Phillip Rivers isn't the guy that he wants running his offense, then I think the organization owes it to him to give him an opportunity to have the guy that he wants running the team to see what it looks like.
So a couple of things there. Cleveland, I'll let you chime in, but a couple of things there. So you really feel that the organization has full backing, and Anthony Lynn has full support of the organization, regardless of what direction they go.
No, I'm not saying that.
What
I'm saying is I think they're still kind of debating which direction they want to go. I think Anthony has been pretty clear with what he said when we've talked to him about it, what he prefers. But I still think there's a part of the organization that's sentimental to Phillip Rivers because of everything that he's done, because of his legacy, because he's a guy that's really kind of carried that franchise and has been the face of that franchise for over a decade and would like to see him go out, you know, like Eli Manning did with the Giants. So I still think there's some debate and some back and forth going on between the decision makers of that team, and I'm interested to see how it shakes out.
Okay. Well, that would be a hell of a commute, considering that Phillip is about, you know, I didn't talk to the moving van, and Antonio Brown apparently didn't talk to the coordinate this moving.
Well, I think Phillip could find a condo in Costa Mesa.
Oh, okay. All right. There you go. But again, he's been commuting, so that'd be a big change because he's been commuting to San Diego kind of so he can get back to spend time with his big family. That'd be a huge change if he decided to go that route.
It would be to be away from his 9 kids, yes.
Yeah, that's something to consider. Cleveland, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that to this point, I think the silence has been deafening with regards to the direction that they want to go with Phillip Rivers, and Eric kind of alludes to the fact that the organization is somewhat split in the direction they want to go, not quite saying, and perhaps even not really knowing, you know, which side really has more of the, you know, influence with regards to that. But moving into their new stadium, I think that they want to make a splash, and I think that it's either going to be a very high-named marquee player that's currently a free agent, or Justin Herbert, as he referred to earlier, as his coined to be the savior, so to speak, and the future of the franchise. So I really don't think that Philip Rivers is too much in the mix, from my perspective, in that they're either going to go with just Herbert straightforward or someone that's really going to put fans in the seats in that new stadium going forward.
That's a great question, because I'm trying to figure out, is Tom Brady really going to help you sell tickets? I mean, does he have the kind of cachet that LeBron brings when he goes to the Lakers? Because Tom is 42. I mean, he's going to be coming in there with a cane, and who's going to throw the ball for him? I mean, he's not getting any younger. So we're not going to see Tom Brady of 10 years ago. And, you know, the system is different. Maybe Tom Brady will sell tickets. I mean, I just don't know if that's going to be kind of the answer to help you drum up, PSL sales.
Well, at least I'm curious as well. At least he would be there for a year. I just don't like – I particularly don't like – you go from a 37-year quarterback to a 42-year-old quarterback.
Yeah.
That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But the word around town, or from different thoughts and frame of thoughts, are that the Chargers do have a good defense. They do have receivers. They do have a quality running back. The offensive line could use a little help, but
– yes.
They are talking about all the pieces that the Chargers have that would assist Brady in doing what he does, thinking and dunking, going deep. Hunter Henry's pretty good. You know, as long as he's on the field, he's pretty solid. So that's very interesting. And Pop had a very interesting comment one day walking to the locker room when he said,
"You got to explain who Pop is."
Why don't you explain who Popper is?
Daniel Popper from The Athletic.
Daniel Popper from The Athletic, he had a very interesting comment when he said owners really don't care who's in the seat, who's in the stands. That's why the owners didn't matter. It didn't matter to them that there was 8-2 Vikings fans at the Chargers Stadium, or 9-1 when the Green Bay Packers were there, 9-1 when the Steelers were there.
The stadium was still full.
The stadium was still full, and that's all they care about.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting comment, if they really care about that. And I never kind of got around to asking a question. Like, I've talked to players about, how do you feel when the fans are totally against you? You don't have a home crowd, and they just say, "Hey, as long as we're playing football, as long as the game starts at 1 o'clock, we can get down. It doesn't matter who's in the stands." But the ownership, I really wanted to kind of know from Tim when he talked there, and I hate that I missed it. I want to know kind of. He talked about that splash, or somebody asked him about that splash, but I want to know kind of, did he feel obligated to build a team for the fans in Los Angeles? And it didn't sound like he did. It didn't sound like he did. And I want to ask him about that, but I just never got a chance to ask him.
Tom's not trying to build a team for the fans. He's trying to build a team that wins games. This is a guy that came up through Bill Polian. He's not trying to appease fans and try to get butts in the seats. He's trying to win games and ultimately win a Super Bowl, however they can do that.
Okay. Your thoughts on Melvin Gordon, and are we expecting a Bosa holdout?
Well, Melvin's coming back, right? I mean,
well, that's what he said. As to be in training camp, he said he was coming back too. But they gotta come to some kind of terms. Do you know something? Have you heard anything?
They gotta scratch out a check that meets his desires. I don't know if they're gonna do that. It's a weird situation because it's basically a love fest between Melvin Gordon and Tom Telesco.
Right.
Telesco moved up to draft him. Melvin loves playing for the team and the organization, likes his teammates, loves living in Southern California.
Sure.
So you're just kind of like, why don't you guys figure it out? But I also understand Melvin's perspective that this really is his one opportunity to make generational type money that will change his life and his family's life. So he's trying to get the most that he can get, because he's a running back and you're probably only going to get one big contract. So me, that might not happen with the Chargers. That might happen somewhere else. You know, unfortunately, if you're a Charger fan, because I do think Melvin helps them win games. In terms of Bosa, yeah, there's certainly a possibility that he could hold out, that they franchise him if he doesn't get the contract that he wants. And it seems like this is a year that they're going to have to figure out, you know, what they're going to do with Bosa, similar to what happened to Melvin the previous year, you know, with Bosa going into the final year of his rookie deal. They do have cap space, though. They have over $50 million available in cap space. And if you're not going to give it to Rivers, why mm-hmm. not scratch out a check for Bosa as a type of impact player that he is at the position? That said, when Bosa was hurt last year, they went 7-2. So they have proven that they can win games without him, even though I think Bosa's a beast and he's one of the best at his position. So, it's, you know, again, it's another interesting dilemma for this team. You know, what are they going to do with Phillip? Are they going to give Bosa, you know, one of the highest deals for for a defensive end in league history? Are you right. going to bring Hunter Henry back? Are you going to bring Melvin Gordon back? A lot of questions.
Within those three guys, Hunter Henry has to be a shoo-in. Like, they have to give him money, right? I mean, Conklin isn't going to get it done. Who's the other tight end who replaced Henry midway through the season?
Sean Colkin, who's on the IR.
Sean Colkin. But there was another guy.
Virgil Green.
Virgil Green. Yeah, I don't – either one of those. Neither one, Sean or Virgil, is not Hunter Henry.
The guy from Wisconsin that you're referring to. I forget his name, though.
Yeah. Henry, I think, come on. Out of those three guys, Gordon, Bosa, and Hunter Henry, I mean, Hunter Henry has to come back, correct? I mean,
he'd be the cheapest out of those three. So, and they do – that's plus those – philosophy is to draft, develop, and re-sign. And so he likes signing his picks if they're productive. And Hunter's proven he's been productive, but he has had trouble staying on the field. So maybe that affects his value if he hits free agency.
All right. Eric, thank you for that feedback on the Chargers. Now, if you put on the Hall of Fame committee hat for us.
Is there a specific question?
Oh, a couple. I got a few questions, man. Just get comfortable, buddy. Luke Kuechly, is he a Hall of Famer?
Yeah, that's a no-brainer.
No-brainer. Cleveland, you care to retort?
Eric, I hate to say this, but I say no. I say the body of work is not as extensive enough to become a Hall of Famer. The freak, when he was playing, when he was a dominant individual at the linebacker position, but I just don't think he did it for long enough to get the gold jacket. That's just my personal opinion.
Okay, and then Bobby Wagner, I'm assuming you're going to say Bobby Wagner should be in, right?
I'm not. If Bobby Wagner runs for two more years, then absolutely, but if he doesn't, then I don't think so.
Now, Kuechly played, what?
Eight years.
12 years?
No, he's only 28. He played 8 years.
How many years did he play?
He played eight years. He played 8 years, went to a Super Bowl. I think he had 3 years over 100 yards. I think it was 3 years. 100 tackles, yeah.
How many All-Pro?
All-Pro, let me see.
I think six. I think he had six of those.
Six All-Pro? That's a lot.
All-Pro.
That's a lot. That is a lot right there. My mind is switching right there.
I mean, I'm looking just because he brought it up. I mean, he went to the Pro Bowl, what, 8 straight years?
So he's always, I mean.
He's a good player, man.
So okay, this is, again, why I love to have you on board. And I love to chat with you, man. And I know you get busy hearing my stupid questions. But
I think Cleveland brings up a great point, though. And I think it does matter is how long you play in the league. I think longevity, to me, is a big deal. And so when you look at it, 28, you know, retire a little early. I think Patrick Willis is another example, a guy that retired early, was a beast, but did he play long enough to give you the longevity that you would like to see in a Hall of Famer?
Leads to my very next point is how big is that longevity piece? performance, okay, he's a stud, six times, half his year, more than half the years he played, he was all pro. Okay,
mm-hmm.
That's being good more than half the years you played. But how important is that longevity versus just production when you're in the game?
I think it's part of the decision process, at least for me as a voter. I can't speak for others, and
sure.
I think other people probably weigh it on different levels. But I do look at it and see, I look at how long they played and were they healthy. But then I also look at their best 4 or 5 years, were they dominant? And that's
okay.
kind of where I go with Keekly. Like, when his best 4 or 5 years, he was the best guy playing, you know, other than maybe Wagner. So
mm-hmm.
I think you kind of have to factor all that into it, when, at least from my point of view, when you're making a decision on guys.
Cleavon, any feedback? I can talk to Eric for hours, man. He had to shut me up one time and just, hey, Cam, I'm busy. I'm busy tweeting. I can't talk to you right now.
Yeah.
Okay. You got any more, Cleavon?
To be honest, my threshold is usually 10 years. And
okay.
like Eric was saying, I like to see, you know, 5 to 7 years of tremendous dominance. I'm not going to say it's easy to dominate at your position for a shorter period of time. Actually,
mm-hmm.
it is easier to dominate for a shorter period of time.
Yeah.
However, if you're, like, really super great at the top of your game for, like, say, 5 to 7 years, and then for, like, 3 years you're in the top five of that conversation, I have a much easier time putting the gold jacket on you. At first, you were just a beast for 5 or 6 years, and you were the dude. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
yeah.
I want to see just a little bit more of an extensive body of work. Like, you went from, like, the best at your position to top five at your position to, like, top 10, and then you quit. That's kind of how I like to see Hall of Famers typically.
Yeah, Cleavon, I think that's fair, but I think the one thing that we're going to have to get used to is guys are going to retire earlier because of the CTE stuff. And so that's going to kind of change how you evaluate players. I mean, you heard it. Keekly was teary-eyed and kind of like,
yeah.
I still want to keep playing, but, like, I can't. Like, it's not right for me to do that for my family. And I think that we're going to have to weigh those things. Look at Marshawn. Marshawn's body work is pretty good, but he's not going to have the kind of compiled stats that Frank Gore is going to have.
So, Eric, you know, when Cleavon talks about the Hall of Fame voting, we got to kind of take that with a grain of salt. This is the same guy who didn't want to put Terrell Davis in the Hall of Fame.
I was waiting for you to bring up Terrell.
So, you know, we have to.
And I stand by it. And I stand by it, Eric. Stand by it.
I respect that, Cleavon.
But in Cleavon, I did get a chance to talk to Terrell, and then he responded to Cleavon, and I don't think Cleavon actually had much to say after that. That was pretty.
He asked the wrong question, Eric, but that's okay.
Hey, Eric, let's take a break right here, and I'm going to come back. And fans, we're going to have Eric back for another few, our second segment, excuse me, and then just for a few more questions. Eric, let's take a quick break here. Cleavon, hold tight. All right, guys, we're back with Hall of Fame voter Eric Williams, Los Angeles Chargers beat writer. Thank you guys for your time. Thank you once again, Eric, for joining us. And we're talking about the Hall of Fame voting process. And could you elaborate on this process for our fans and kind of talk – I know you and I talked about it once before, but who are you submitting this year, or who are you representing – or presenting, I think it is. And then how long is this process? Is it a day process? You send your votes ahead of time, and then you guys get in a room and vote on these guys. Everybody has their votes or their presentation on the individual. How, if you could, shorten up the process and
sure.
elaborate how this process works for our fans.
Okay. I'm not going to be presenting anybody because there's no Chargers that are in the finalist list, so I won't be presenting this year.
So you only do Chargers then? You would only do
right,
Chargers?
Right, I'm the Chargers representative for the Hall
okay.
of Fame, so I would only present a Charger.
Okay.
it's a month long process. We start by submitting names that we want people to consider, and then those names I think are whittled down to, again, I want to say 25, and then from 25 we get down to I believe the 15, and we vote throughout the year to get down to the finals. Mm. And then once we get down to 15, then that's when we meet on the Saturday before Super Bowl, and it's a day long process. You hear the presentations on the 15 guys. We cut it down to 10, and then after that we debate some more, and then cut it down to 5, and then you know they're announced at the show.
Now this year is a little different because with the 100 year in the NFL 100 year ceremony, et cetera, they're having more inductees. Is that the reason that these extra coaches are getting in?
Yeah, they had a special induction class for the 100-year anniversary of the league. And so it was a 10-member centennial class, I believe. Actually, I think it's 15. And it included two coaches, three contributors, and 10 players. And those are the coaches that got in. And this was a blue-ribbon committee that was separate from people that are usually Hall of Fame voters.
Okay.
So we didn't get to vote on these.
Okay. All right. Cool. So, Bill Cowher ahead of Jimmy Johnson? Did you scratch your head when you hear that? Or
I want to reiterate that we did not get the vote on you.
Well, no. I'm not. I understand you didn't vote on that.
Yeah.
But I mean that was a head scratcher.
Well,
let me just
say this: the finalists last year amongst the top 15 and coaches were Tom Flores and Don Coryell, neither of whom got in the centennial class.
Our next question is John Lynch versus Troy Polamalu. Who would you see getting in the first?
Yeah, for me, that's Troy Polamalu all day just because of the impact he had. He was a unique player. He won. And I just
say they did win two when you say that. He did win two, didn't he?
I think he won two. I'm not positive, though. I know he won.
He won two.
He won two. Right? He won one early, right? Was he playing?
Yeah,
he was on my team.
Yeah, he beat the Hawks, and then they came back and won again.
And then they beat Arizona.
Yeah.
Okay. Troy was a beast. I mean,
Troy was great.
He was a transcendent player, in my opinion. John Lynch is a very good player who I think deserves to be in. It's just there's a lot of safety
player
there. I mean, you got Steve Atwater. You got the dude from Green Bay, Leroy Butler.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of guys. But it makes it tough when you start to cut down to 10 and then to 5.
I got you. Got you. Okay. Now, Eric, talking about quarterbacks, you emphatically stated early in the season you like a quarterback who can move a little bit, and specifically you were talking about Jalen Hurts.
Uh huh. Whoa. What did I say about? I don't even remember. What did I say about Jalen Hurts?
Well, we were talking about quarterbacks. We were just talking about quarterbacks in general.
Yes.
And then you specifically said you like quarterbacks who can move a little bit, and you asked me, was Jalen Hurts a first round draft pick?
Yes.
And I said no.
Right.
And I want to get this on tape so my fans can hear this.
Okay.
Jalen Hurts, now we know Trevor Lawrence is a young guy. He's going to come back. He's not eligible to be in the league right now. However, uh-huh. I'd like to just include him in the mix.
Trevor's not coming out this year.
But okay, Burrow or Hurts then? If you want to leave Trevor out, I was going to leave Trevor out. Trevor moves a little bit, but I was just going to kind of keep that three kind of different quarterbacks, if you will.
So Burrow or Jalen Hurts?
Yeah.
Come on now. that's not even worth going into. I mean, obviously Jalen Hurts is a work in progress. I mean, we saw what Burrow is ridiculous. I mean,
but he kind of came out of nowhere, though. He kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, but, I mean, you watch him, and he passes the eye test. I mean, he can make all the throws.
Yeah.
He's very accurate. and he can move. I mean, to me, this was the main thing that I was trying to make the point of when I was talking about this. I just feel like any quarterback that's coming in the league right now, third and five, you have to go be able to get a first down. You just have to do that. There's nobody that's just going to stay back there and sit in the pocket, third and five,
right,
go through all four progressions, and if they don't have anything, just get sacked. I mean,
yeah,
that's just not the way that the game is being played right now. And you look at it, I mean, even Drew Brees, third and five, Drew Brees can go get a first down. He's a good enough athlete to do that.
Well, for whatever reason, he didn't do that against in the playoffs. But,
well,
yeah,
Aaron Rodgers, even as he gets older, he can still move a little bit. We're seeing it, and it's part of it is because of the systems that they're playing in college, spread systems. So colleges want athletic quarterbacks at the controls, so that guys that can move and threaten the defense. And that's kind of what I saw in Jalen.
Okay.
He can run, obviously. Now, can he, can he be consistent from the pocket and make all the throws? That's to be determined. We haven't seen that. So we'll see if he can improve through the draft process and when he gets in the league.
Yeah, where would you where does he rank on your quarterback list, Jalen Hurts? Where does he rank?
Well, I think he's a second round pick.
Second round, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think Burrow is one to me. I think Tua is two, depending on what the medicals say.
I hope my Dolphins don't take Tua. Really
Herbert
don't.
Is three, Love is four. And then I would put Hurst at five.
Okay. I think Tua, you guys can get at me later, but I think Tua is damaged goods. Broken left ankle, broken right ankle, then a broken hip. I don't want to draft him as my quarterback. I don't want to spend my number five pick on a quarterback who's been injured three consecutive seasons.
What if he heals, though?
I mean, I'll take the chance. I'll take the chance. I don't want to spend. I mean, now I'm worried about this guy for the next. He's gonna be like 8-7 from the grocery store. I'm gonna be worried about that bump in the road. I'm gonna be worried about them while turning. I think he's gonna get hurt again. Like I don't want to deal with that. At least I can get me somebody who I have confidence will be there next Sunday, and I just don't have that confidence in Tua.
That's why you have a backup quarterback.
So we have problems, Eric, just getting one quarterback. Now you want us to think about having two quarterbacks? Come on, now that's crazy. But you're right. I mean obviously there's some problems down there in the 305 with two key players playing in the AFC Championship that were in Miami at the same time, and then they get rid of them, and they're playing for the Super Bowl, a Super Bowl berth. Obviously, there's more problems than just a quarterback down there in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
I hate that I brought that up. Eric, before I let you go, man, I want to thank you once again for joining us. Thank you for giving us your time. I appreciate all your feedback. But now you got to make a pick for the Super Bowl for us. Chiefs or 49ers, who you got?
I can't pick against Patrick Mahomes. I've seen him too much over the last 2 years. I just feel like he's going to find a way, kind of like Russell Wilson in the past has been able to find a way. But I am interested to see how San Francisco's defense matches up to Kansas City's offense and all the speed that they have, what they're going to do to try to limit those explosive plays. But I just think Kansas City's got too much juice.
I would agree with this, and I'll see if Cleveland would admit this, Eric, but when they drafted Patrick Mahomes, and I watched him play in the preseason. He didn't play in that whole year with Alex Smith there, his rookie year. I was wondering, like, Andy Reid, when do you put this guy in? Alex Smith had a great – he was playing well. He was playing really well that season, but yet and still, I knew he was a dink and dunk. I knew there was limitations. But, Cleveland, do you recall me calling for Andy Reid to put Mahomes in the game? Do you recall that?
You know, Cam, this is one of your signature calls that you always like to want to fall back on and make you sound like a genius, because you see what Patrick Mahomes has done since, he's taken the reins. But at the time, I definitely thought that he was someone that needed to sit behind Alex Smith and kind of learn the game
and, you know, before he got his feet wet with live bullets. And once he did, he showed what he was, you know, capable of doing. So, you know, good call on your part, Cam. You were able to assess that from a distance, and you know, definitely it's panned out for you.
I didn't know why it took so long for Andy Reid to put him in the game. Like, I thought he should have been playing at least midway through that season.
That would be because he was playing behind a number one pick in the draft that was not doing anything wrong, and that the system was allowing Alex Smith to have success. So you can't just say, hey, we drafted this guy, so Alex Smith wants you to come sit on the bench and let Patrick Mahomes do his thing. And
but,
you also did not anticipate this type of production. Otherwise, he would not have fallen to the Kansas City Chiefs. He would have been the number one pick. And all of
the
teams passed on him.
I didn't say I identified him. I just said once I saw him playing that preseason game, he was going up the field.
Well, in preseason. Oh, in preseason, you just had a premonition he was going to be this good?
Have you saw anything different?
Cameron, you did not anticipate him being this good watching his preseason games. That's a lie.
He was going up the field versus Alex Smith throwing these
Cameron,
out routes.
You did not anticipate this type of production when you saw him in preseason. That's a lie.
See, so I guess I'm not going to get the credit, Eric, but I was calling for Alex. I was calling for the benching of Alex Smith midway through that first rookie season of Jimmy Jones.
Nostradamus, man.
Well, I just like football, man. I like football. I think I could see a player or two out there every now and then. But again, Eric, want to thank you, sir. I know you. When do you head out to Miami?
Thursday.
Thursday?
Yeah, not this Thursday. Next Thursday.
Okay, travel safe, big guy. Have some fun. Are you taking a wife and kids, or just you?
Just me.
All right. Well, enjoy the game, man. Enjoy the sights. Work on your tan out there, big guy, and then we'll see you. we'll see you soon, man.
Okay. Thanks, Cam. Appreciate
it. Have fun in the
305,
my friend.
Appreciate you, man.
Thanks, bro.
I'm gonna enjoy it.
The people at What's Good in Sports want to talk to you, talk to the fans, and make sure you guys tune into the website. Every Cleveland, have you seen the What's Good in Sports website?
Yeah, it's beautiful, man. Lots of positive stories and lots of great content.
The people there told me personally, make sure you guys go visit the website. So please, when you get a chance after the show, check out the What's Good in Sports.com website.
Fans, in the championship season or the championship weekend, we saw the Chiefs obviously rout the Titans to earn their first Super Bowl berth in 50 years, with Mahomes leading a torrid comeback. Now, Mr. Cleveland, before we get into this game, I want to ask you about a specific play. The play was right before Patrick Mahomes, right before Patrick's, 30-yard run that he had, where he danced up the sideline and cut back and broke a couple tackles where the players weren't really in the game and scored. You remember that touchdown run, right?
I do.
Do you remember the play right before the touchdown run? He dropped back, scrambled a little bit, ran to the sideline, and the defender tried to tag him out of bounds, where Mahomes was like, okay, you're not going to touch me? He scooted up upfield for about 7 or 8 more yards right before that touchdown play. Do you recall that?
I do recall that.
That linebacker should have popped Mahomes' ass right on the sideline. He went there and tried to tag him out, just kind of assuming, he's going to run out of bounds. I'll just touch him out of bounds. If he pops Mahomes' ass, like hits him and knocks him to the turf, I guarantee Mahomes does not run upfield, like dance upfield. It was almost the same play. Mahomes like, hell, I'll run again. They're not going to tackle me. I'll run again on him. And then ran and got an end zone. That changes the tenor of that team. I'd have been livid. If I was on the defense, if I was the defensive coordinator, I'd have been livid when that linebacker got over to the sideline. Like, what are you doing? But this isn't two-hand touch. And it just kind of it changed the tenor of that football game, because then that allowed them to keep the momentum going and to complete the comeback. What do you think about that?
I think that defensive players are extremely cognizant of getting the 15-yard penalty for unnecessary roughness, roughing the quarterback, and they play differently. That's a lot of the reason that quarterbacks, Lamar Jackson, Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes, kind of get that little extra incentive to kind of pretend like they're not really running fast, and all of a sudden they just take off because they know that you have to kind of slow up so that you're not involved in that. And it's unfortunate for the defense because you can't just treat a quarterback like any other football player on the field. They are different. And so that's why that happens. It's not like he doesn't want to just smash him and, drive him to the ground. But, look at how many penalties Clay Matthews got last year for tackling somebody and then putting his full, quote-unquote, body weight on the quarterback, which almost never actually really happened. It's just a conspiracy theory.
Cleveland, so I talked to a couple of linebackers about this specific mentality. And, yeah, they say it's tough. Yes, they think about the penalties because it costs them money. I agree with you. But then they did say there's a couple quarterbacks that they were willing to take that fine for. However, I would have popped his ass. If I was on the field right then, I'm popping your ass, Mahomes. And then he doesn't turn up field like he did on the very next play. He turned up field, went and then he cuts back, and then he's run. I'm popping his ass so he scampers out of bounds the next time. And maybe
But to your point, Cam, what he did is he ran to the sideline, right?
Yeah.
So the defensive player has to slow up, and then he accelerates. And, at a standstill, he's faster than that dude.
Yeah.
So once you kind of slow up because you don't want to hit him, you don't want to hurt him, you don't want to get the penalty, and then he accelerates and turns the corner, what are you supposed to do?
Damn the fine, man. Go pop his ass. We're sending a message out here.
It's not damn the fine. It's not even about the fine. It's about the 15-yard that comes with that.
Well, okay, 15 yards. I'll give him the 15 yards.
Why are you giving away 15 yards? They're already on the 30. Why are you giving away 15 yards?
I'm sending the message.
Now all of a sudden it's first down and they're on the 15.
Come on, that's better than him running for 35 yards on the very next play to score the touchdown. On the very next play, he did it. Maybe if it happened in the third quarter, I'm like, okay, maybe there was no kind of synergy there. But he did that on the very next play. He's like, oh, if I run to the sideline, they're not going to hit me. I'm comfortable, and I can cut up field. He did that on the very next play.
But he felt that way because of the rules of the game, Cam, because he knows the way that they protect the quarterback. So what are you saying? Just get all, Jack Tatum on him just because you can? That's not part of football.
Send a message. We're playing football. When that play I was speaking about, the guy, if he could have hit him inbounds. He could have hit him inbounds. However, he pulled up like Mahomes pulled up. And he kind of tried to two-hand touch him out of bounds.
How many times have you seen somebody take one step and push a quarterback down to the ground and get a 15-yard penalty?
Look, the quarterback was scrambling.
Even when they're giving themselves up, they have a different protocol. They have mindset when it comes to quarterbacks.
Clowney would have hit his ass. Clearly, Clowney would have hit his ass. Regardless, quarterback was a runner, and that's why I like Clowney's mentality, although I think that was kind of dirty. I like the mentality because Clowney would have popped his ass if he got him on the sideline, and I would have been thrilled with that. Because in that situation, again, that just lets the quarterback know we can run free, and that's what I'm trying to prevent. So we spent a lot of time on that, but I would have popped his ass. I would have been livid if I was a defensive coach saying pop his ass, because if you don't, you give them extra confidence. And then Mahomes is somebody who doesn't need that extra confidence, because you see he's already tremendous already. That's all I'm saying. It's not trying to be dirty. I like Mahomes. I'm glad they won, actually. I just thought in that specific play, it just bothered me that the defender kind of let up. let not only on that specific play, let Mahomes pick up another 6 or 7 yards, but then on the very next play, he let him rumble because he didn't hit him earlier. Mahomes rumbled for 30 yards. Had the guy hit him, Mahomes, I guarantee you Mahomes steps out after he picks up that 7 or 8 yards. I guarantee you he steps out of bounds, and he's like, ooh, I'm not going to get hit again. So that's the message. That's the message that I would have wanted to send. Nonetheless, the Chiefs came roaring back. Two impressive comebacks. They were down 10 points twice in that game. Came back. They were just too much for the Tennessee Titans and Ryan Tannehill. You saw when they needed the quarterback to step up and do something, you kind of saw Tannehill is who we thought Tannehill was, or at least who I thought he was.
Oh, wow. What's with you? Wow. Okay.
The 49ers, man, that was pure domination of the Packers. Not only was the Mostert run for 200 yards on them, but that was just pure domination. Offensive, defensively, special teams. Your thoughts on that performance from the hated Niners?
Fantastic performance on their part. The thing that really shocked me about the Green Bay Packers is that they really only have one receiver. That was kind of alarming, considering that you have a quarterback that's a generational quarterback. I had never seen the Packers exposed like that. I mean, I was just waiting for them to throw to someone other than Devontae Adams, which Richard Sherman did a great job of, shutting down. It's like, where are all your other, weapons? After the defensive line put a tremendous amount of pressure on Aaron, not that that's something he can't handle, but with no running game and no other receivers, yeah, they got exposed quite tremendously.
Yeah, that was the they had a few receivers kind of at the beginning of the season. It was a receiver by committee, because if you remember, Adams was down for a few weeks in the season, and I know this because Adams was my freaking fantasy football player.
Yeah,
so,
that's correct. I do remember that.
Thanks. So Adams was down, and yeah, these receivers kind of played.
They were not adequate fill-ins, really. I mean, when it comes down to it, I mean, they needed to step up and make plays. And considering that Richard Sherman, their best cover corner, was pretty much, and he even did something a little unusual. Not to get into the whole Darrell Revis controversy, he actually did kind of follow Devontae Adams around the field. So that even gave more opportunity for those guys to get open. And these Geronimo Allisons and family guys, they didn't really do anything. Yeah, Lazar, the only person that really did anything was Jimmy Graham. And that's coming out from the tight end position. So I was a little bit shocked that they couldn't get more production out of other receivers other than Devontae Adams.
Yeah, it was pretty alarming because they're only one player. Jones had 5 receptions coming out of the backfield. There was only one player, one receiver with more than 3 receptions outside of Adams. And, that was pretty bad production from those guys. But that was domination. I mean, that game, that was pure domination. And the Niners looked tremendous in that game, and that's what's really going to make this. Their defense playing with the defensive line, the cornerbacks that they have, as Eric talked about, how will they handle the speed of Kansas City? Is going to be that makes it a good game. We have next week to give our picks, but that's going to make this a tremendous matchup for Super Bowl 54. So, Cleveland, before we close, let's close this segment, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about a few NBA topics, man. Okay, Cleveland, on this date in history, 1827, this is actually January 21, 1827, excuse me. Freedom Journal was established. That was the first black paper in publication. 1851, January 25th, Sojourner Truth addressed the first black women's rights convention in Akron, Ohio. So going back to the 1800s, we had people standing up for Black history. And then in 1962, January 24th it was, Jackie Robinson was elected into the Baseball Hall of Fame. So that was back in 1962. So kudos to baseball for getting it right way back when. Cleveland, in basketball, we had some, obviously Martin Luther King's birthday was celebrated on Monday. Jaylen Brown celebrated by crowning your king. Now, do you think him flying to watch his son play basketball had anything to do with Jaylen Brown?
No, it wasn't the flying to to watch the game. It was the injustice that was done to Bronny while he was playing that really kind of infuriated LeBron and had him really off of his game. The fans in the stands throwing, objects at his son. I mean, you know, it was hard for him to kind of get his
focus,
get his brain wrapped back around trying to play a professional NBA basketball game. I mean, he did the best that he could, but you have to understand. I mean, people trying to, do things to his son definitely had an impact on the overall outcome of the game.
Well, so everybody, all the Lakers were concerned about what happened to Bronny, huh? So it was a 30-point win because
– Well, no. You specifically mentioned the Jaylen Brown dunk, and, that does count for 2 points. Good for him. You got 2 points for making that bucket. Congratulations.
Okay.
Kudos to you.
Okay.
You asked if there was some type of effect that LeBron had with regards to going to the game, and that's what I'm telling you.
Okay. Interesting. I haven't heard that in the last 2 days of all pundits and commentators speaking about basketball. I never heard anybody say that impact. That's why you're different, man. I guess that's why I have you on the show. Zion Williams got his first bucket in the game tonight. I'm not sure what the score is right now. I'm not watching the game, but Zion Williams got his first bucket. The Pelicans are actually playing decent basketball, if you will. And last I checked, they were in the eighth seed, and it looks like they're going to lose to the Spurs tonight in a close game.
Well, let me jump in on that one, because I actually have been, kind of an avid observer of the game as we've been kind of doing the show. Zion Williamson hit 4 straight threes in a row and actually went for 17 in the fourth quarter, kind of out of nowhere. So I was not expecting that kind of production from him. I was expecting kind of a, modest kind of mediocre game, get your feet wet, but no, he jumped right in there like a soldier and proved who he is. He is that dude.
22 points, 4 for 4 for 3. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. 7 rebounds.
In a row.
Okay.
It wasn't like spread out over the game. It was in a row.
Mm. They just kept coming down and giving it to him.
Kept coming down, pulling. Yep. And he just was like, I thought I was completely out of his range, not even in his repertoire. And no, man.
And it looks like he has J.J. Redick there shooting him, teaching him how to shoot. So, and it actually looks like Brandon Ingram is still still leading the team in buckets. So, Zion Williamson coming in and taking his shots hadn't impacted Ingram in so far, because he had the same 22 points in the game. So, they actually had seven players in double figures. So they look like
they're doing okay, but of course the schedule's going to catch up with them and they won't make the playoffs. But it's good to see Zion kind of getting his feet wet, which is what everyone was hoping for. So this future looks bright for those guys.
Okay, Mr. Cleveland, I'm glad you think this future looks bright. Hopefully your Lakers can get things turned around. Why don't you share with the fans, who do you have as your top four teams in the Eastern Conference?
My top four in the Eastern Conference would be the Milwaukee Bucks.
Okay.
The Boston Celtics.
They probably weren't in there yesterday. I'm almost positive of that, but okay.
The Miami Heat.
Okay.
And the Philadelphia 76ers once Joel Embiid comes back and is healthy.
Okay, well, today is Today is January 22, sir, 2020. And right as of this moment, you have the Philadelphia 76ers ahead of Miami Heat?
No, I said the Miami Heat in front of the Philadelphia 76ers. I said the Milwaukee Bucks, the Boston Celtics, the Miami Heat, and the Philadelphia 76ers.
So where do you have Toronto Raptors?
They are a solid number five.
Interesting. Okay. They have three games ahead of Philadelphia and Boston, or Philadelphia in the loss column. The tie with Boston. I think the Toronto Raptors today are a better team than the Philadelphia 76ers. I like Philly. I expected Philly to win the East. However, they just haven't shown that they're ready to win the East. They haven't shown it. And I'm actually surprised. I'm not going to lie. I like Giannis. I like what the Bucks are doing as a unit. I think Giannis is doing a lot of this on his own. But he's good. And they're playing better, much better than I expected. I discounted Toronto the last 2 years. I think I discounted Milwaukee Bucks this past season, or going into this season, actually. And they're impressive. They're impressive, actually. How about who's your top four teams in the Western Conference?
Well, this might surprise me with the number one. But the Los Angeles Lakers at number one.
Okay.
Get that?
Yeah, I noted that. I pinned that one in.
Okay, cool. Number two, the Denver Nuggets. Number three, the Utah Jazz.
Really? The,
number four.
The Dallas Mavericks.
Number four. Number four. The Los Angeles. Number four. The Los Angeles Clippers.
Oh, really?
And number five, the Houston Rockets.
Oh, okay. So Dallas Mavericks, you know, we're in there.
Well, I can only pick five, Sam. I mean, those teams have been around. So
you put Denver and Utah ahead of the Clippers, huh?
I did, yes.
Oh my goodness gracious! Okay, my man. With your Lakers on the East Coast swing here, they got New York. They barely beat the Knicks tonight. They got Philly, right?
They did. They did. Thanks so much for asking. That's really good. Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't be so confident.
And your Clippers lost to the Atlanta Hawks, the second worst team in the NBA.
They beat the Hawks earlier in the year, and didn't they?
Well, they're supposed to, because they're the second worst team in the NBA.
But you left out some important information when you say that. They played without Paul George.
Oh man, what's wrong with them? Man, what was wrong with him?
They played without Kawhi Leonard. They played without
Paul. Oh, man, for real?
Yeah, there was a little limited.
So I guess they don't have as much depth as we originally thought.
Well, when you are playing without your stars, I mean, that impacts your squad. I mean, you've seen that.
Okay,
with AD right now.
So I guess without their stars, they could lose to anybody because they lost to the second worst team in basketball.
Hey, without your complement of stars, yes, you're more than likely.
You might lose to the second worst team in basketball.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And you see what happens. That's why you need your full complement of the squad.
Yep. I hope it can help you soon.
Mr. Cleveland, we're gonna end on that note, sir. Fans, I want you to note the hatred that the bias and the hatred that he has right now. This will likely come right back to him. Let the people know where they can find you.
They can find me at Cleveland Weather on Twitter, and they can find me Cleveland Steel on Instagram.
You can always find your guy, your man Cam, What's Good in Sport on Twitter, Voice of Fans on Instagram. Shoot me an email, info@whatsgoodinsports.com. You can always check in with me that way. Fans, again, I want to thank you guys for tuning in. Once again, your contributions to our show have been very much appreciated. Everything you do to donate to the show is for the betterment of the Voice of the Fans podcast that you guys tune in faithfully every week. Shout out to our Rise Radio listeners, with Rise Radio being pumped out of Vegas. Hear us every Saturday. Tuned in, you can check us there, or just listen to us on any podcast forum that you choose to hear. Or you can listen to us on any podcast forum, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, CastBox, Radio Public, Voice of the Fans on any of those platforms. I want to thank you guys once again for your donations. All your donations are for the betterment of the show, being immediately repurposed for the betterment of this podcast. Be sure to rate and review our show while you're at it. Thank you, as always, for making our voice your choice. I'll let you, Chief.
Have a good night, Jeff.